and welcome to Things We Said Today, our bi-weekly podcast about anything and everything to do with the Beatles, collectively and individually, as a group and as solo artists. I'm Alan Kozin, the author of The Beatles from the Cavern to the Rooftop, and Got That Something, How the Beatles, I Want to Hold Your Hand Changed Everything, and co-author with Adrian Sinclair of The McCartney Legacy, Volume 1, 1969 to 73. And the forthcoming Volume 2, 1974 to 1980. And I'm joined by my two regular co-hosts, Ken Michaels, who you know is the host of the syndicated Beatles radio show Every Little Thing, and co-host of the solo Beatles podcast Talk More Talk. He also has his own YouTube channel, which you should check out, packed with Beatles-related interviews and things. And it's called Ken Michaels Radio on YouTube. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Alan. Good to be back.
Yeah, it seems like just a few days.
We should do this more often.
Yeah. And also Darren DeVivo, who's been a DJ at WFUV-FM 90.7 in the New York area since 1984. And if you're not in the vicinity of New York, you can hear him anyway and everything else at WFUV. At WFUV.org. Hello, Darren.
Hello, Alan. Hey, Ken. Hello, everyone. Hello. Gee, yeah, we got to stop meeting like this twice in 1 week.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, we took so much time off so I could finish the book that we need to catch up with a lot of stuff. A few days ago, we had a chat with Bruce Spicer and Al Sussman about the Beatles' 60th anniversary of their first visit to the U.S., but that conversation sort of went in all kinds of different directions. We could have done it for another 2 hours. There's always plenty to say about that stuff. So what we're doing now is we're doing sort of a news catch-up show, because in the last couple of months, really an awful lot of interesting stuff has happened, and we haven't been here to do our news segment, and we thought we would catch up with that and also discuss the various things that that require discussion among the news items. So over to Ken.
Yeah, so this is going to be a mixture of very current news and kind of older news. It's very possible that you may not have heard some of the older news when it was first announced. So yeah, we've got a lot of making up to do. And we'll start by just reminding everybody that Yoko Ono turned 91 on February the 18th. God bless her. And, you know, I always say, when you get up there in age, every day is a blessing. And we're so thankful for what she's continuing to do to carry on John's legacy. Happy birthday to Yoko. George Harrison would have been 81 had he lived on February 25th. We note the passing on February 22nd of John Duff Lowe, the English pianist who played with the Quarrymen at the age of 16 when he appeared on the very first recordings made by the group in a recording studio. The two songs were That'll Be the Day and In Spite of All the Danger, which were both released on the Beatles Anthology Volume 1. Lowe attended the Liverpool Institute with Paul and George. And Duff, as he was known to his friends, knew Paul McCartney since 1953, and Paul invited him to join the band in 1958. Duff sold the recordings to Paul in 1981 for £12,000, and Paul had the songs remastered for inclusion in the anthology. Duff later went and played on the Quarrymen album called Open for Engagements, of which only he and Rod Davis were the only members to have played in the Quarrymen in the 1950s. And while Duff was not an original member of the Quarrymen, he toured with Colin Hanton, Rod Davis, and Len Gary at Beatle events around the world until 2017. John Duff Lowe was 81. Anyone care to comment on that?
Just sad that another piece of the Beatles' history, has gone. I never met him. I know he was at, I don't know if he was ever a Fest guest, Fest for Beatles fans, but when the Quarrymen came through, he wasn't playing with them at the time. In fact, I think Pete Shotton the first time, at least, that I saw the Quarrymen at Beatlefest. I believe Pete Shotton was still playing with them. I think it was Len Gary, who would sometimes be on his own as a guest, Colin Hanton, Rod Davis, Pete Shotton. I don't know if that was just the four of them, but I never met John Duffelo, but it was sad to hear that, this part of, Beatle history has passed on.
Yeah, I know that Paul has talked about when he's given his concerts before he plays, in spite of all the danger, which he's been doing for quite some time now, that when they made this shellac disc, there was only one copy made, and so I think John was the first one to take it home with him, and then it went to Paul or to George to Colin Hanton, and then John Duffelo was the last one who had it. And he kept it for like 20, 25 years. So, but the important thing is, apart from being in the Quarrymen, if it wasn't for John Duffelo keeping his copy all these years, we
Yeah.
wouldn't have it in the Beatles anthology. So we have to be grateful for that. But sad to hear of his passing. The biggest news about the Beatles, which received a lot of publicity, is that director Sam Mendes, known for his work on the films No Time to Die, American Beauty, Skyfall, and 1917, is partnering with Sony to work on four biopics, one for each of the Beatles, done from the perspective of each Beatle. It marks the first time that the band's company, Apple Corps, has given permission for the group's life story and music to be used in a scripted film about them. Pippa Harris, who will produce the films, told Deadline that Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr have given their blessings to work on the four films. She says it's a testament to his creative brilliance and powers of persuasion that Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, Sean Lennon, and Olivia Harrison responded with such warmth and enthusiasm as soon as he spoke with them, meaning Sam Mendes. Harris also said that Mendes will have no restrictions on what he depicts from the band members' lives. She says what is truly exciting is for Sam to have the freedom to delve into the lives of each of the Beatles with nothing off limits and no sense of the band wanting him to tell a particular authorized version of their rise to success. So this got a lot of attention, obviously, and the mere fact that these are going to be four films in a theatrical release. And they're saying 2027 is when it should be coming out. We'll be having actors playing each of the four Beatles. What do you guys think about this? This is a big undertaking.
I can see at the Oscars, the award for the most fraught project with the biggest possibilities of disaster, it goes to. I'd love to read his pitch documents and and hear the arguments, because as we know, the Beatles and Apple have not notably been open to this kind of thing in the past. They've barely been open even to allowing Beatles recordings to be used in films or Beatles music. There have been some, mostly the music has to be covers. And some people have made a virtue of that, Across the Universe and I Am Sam. But
Yesterday.
that's right. It's I mean the pitfalls are incredible. It is sort of an interesting idea, this idea of four interlocking films from four points of view. I don't know if you guys know, there's a British playwright, Alan Ayckbourn. He did a series of three plays called The Norman Conquests, and they all take place in a country house in England over a weekend. And the first play, well, I don't know what number, it doesn't matter which number it is, because they're three independent plays, but they're interlocking in the sense that one takes place in the kitchen over the 3 days, one takes place outside the house, and one takes place in the living room. And You can see, like, in one play, someone goes, out of the kitchen screaming something. And then the next night in the living room play, you can hear them screaming out of the kitchen and coming into the living room. And all of these things interlock. And it's finally the complete story once you've seen all three. And this idea of the Beatles story from all four points of view sort of strikes me as possibly like that, except that a lot of the time they were all in the same room. So I'll be curious to see how you can have the four points of view. But yeah, I'll be curious. Is 2027? We'll see what happens.
The one thing I'm really confused about, because there was one article that I read about this where it made it sound like it's the story of the Beatles, and they don't really say if they go into the solo careers at all. But it's almost like the four of them chronologically, bit by bit, and all four of them are in the film. Whereas I thought originally there'd be one film, just John Lennon telling his story with the actor playing John Lennon, and then Paul McCartney in another one, and then one for George and one for Ringo, separate ones that way, instead of all four of them being in the film, gradually telling the story about the same events as it's happening. We don't really know yet, I think.
Yeah, it's an unusual concept, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does.
It can be, and there's going to be a lot of time for this project to fall apart. And we've seen projects of large scale projects not come to fruition. But if this does come off, it has the makings of either being brilliant or a disaster. But still incredibly intriguing. It's almost like everyone tells a different side of a story. So I guess this is going to be expanded to four films. I just wonder how they're going to release them, if they're going to be put out, like separated by X number of months or something, or come out all at the same time. And in this day and age, now who knows where we'll be when it comes to the cinema in 2027, between being able to watch films at home, having to go to the theater first, or by 2027, it may all be, home viewing, and then it really wouldn't matter how they put them out. But it bears watching. Although we probably won't get many updates over this period of time on how the film's progressing. But we'll see. It's intriguing. There isn't a lot of good Beatle films when it comes to dramatizations, not documentaries. They're very, very, very hit and miss. Backbeat was one of the better ones, I thought. There was also some, and I can't even think of, there was that one, and I don't remember if I liked it or not, so long ago that I know Aidan Quinn played Paul McCartney. It was McCartney and
Two of
Lennon.
us? Two of
Oh,
us?
two of us, right. I don't even remember how I felt about that when I saw it. I remember thinking Backbeat was better than it was than I anticipated it being.
Yeah.
And I'm not into musicals, so I really had little to no interest in Across the Universe. Started watching it, and I didn't even make it 5 minutes in, And Yesterday was cute, but it didn't hold me.
Is it The Hours and Times, the one about John and Brian going to Spain?
I don't know if I've seen that one,
But
actually.
it was a sort of artsy film, which I think gave it some cred, and it was well done. Having mentioned the Alan Ayckbourn three plays, I should probably also, of course, mention the Japanese film Rashomon, which is, the same story from multiple points of view, but all in one film. So this goes way beyond that, apparently.
Well, this seems to be the era of the biopic.
Yeah.
You witness the success of Rocketman, the Elton John film, and Bohemian Rhapsody, and now the one on Bob Marley. This seems to be the right time for biopics. So maybe it's jumping on the latest I don't know, trend.
Yeah.
But I
I
think
hope not like those. I hope these Beatles films aren't like those because, I mean, I saw Rocket Man in the theaters and I thought it was okay, but I tend to end up watching these movies with wanting a biography and wanting something factual. And you could tell where it was obvious the story was enhanced for Hollywood. And it jumped around and it wasn't factually accurate. I'm constantly leaning over to my wife going, Elton, put this song out before. All right, I'll shut up now. I thought Bohemian Rhapsody was really good, and Elvis gave me a headache. It was an assault on the senses, I thought. And I haven't seen Bob Marley, and I'm probably, I don't know, not too enthused with the Broadway. I want facts. I don't want to come away from a movie thinking, did he really kick that guy in the ass and he went down the hill? I don't think that really happened. I can't, I want to see a movie that I know that it's based on fact.
Well,
We'll
I don't
see.
know if you guys are in favor of this, because they're saying here in this information that Sam Mendes is getting complete control over the whole project. I would hope that Paul and Ringo would watch this, and if there's anything wrong, that they would have some input, as well as Olivia and Sean.
Remember when Nowhere Boy came out? Paul did some interviews where he said he went to the director and said to her, it didn't really happen that way. And she said, well, Paul, it's a film. It's not a documentary. I personally prefer documentaries, but I'll be curious. I'll be curious to see it. But like Darren, I'll be sitting there. With Paula sort of being the live footnotes, didn't really
That's
happen like that.
5 years after.
But
Just eat your popcorn and watch the movie.
okay, more news, and there's plenty of it. Several weeks ago now, some big news came from Ringo himself in his latest video update. He revealed that at the moment he is working on a country album. Not an EP.
Album. What's
Remember
that?
those? In an interview that Gary Burr gave us on the Talk More Talk podcast, Gary said that Ringo's album will have more of a traditional country sound, not like the more modern country. And Gary has written a song for the album, but couldn't give us the title. In the meantime, coming very soon will be Ringo's next EP called Crooked Boy, produced by Linda Perry. Linda also wrote all the songs, and Ringo's video shows the song titles and lyrics as well. The titles for the EP are Gonna Need Someone, Crooked Boy, February Sky, and Adeline. Ringo also displayed his latest book, Beats and Threads, which illustrates all the drum kits Ringo has used through the years and the clothes he wore in the 60s and 70s. The book is available through juliansauctions.com. And Ringo mentioned that in May and June, Ringo and the All-Stars will be on tour. We already mentioned he has 6 dates in Las Vegas. He just added another 6 dates for that tour. And he plans to do another one in September and October. You should always check the tour tab on Ringo's website to see if he's adding more shows at ringostar.com. But when I heard that news about the country album, I was just so elated because fans have wanted that for a long time, ever since Bukus of Blues. And every now and then he'd slip in a country song on his albums. But he's so right at home vocally and his love for country music and more the old style country that I think we're all going to be very pleased when that comes out.
EP, I believe,
It's
it's
part
not
Record Store Day release too.
record studio, but I couldn't figure out whether or not it's going to be on vinyl, and the vinyl is a Record Store Day release.
Right.
Sometimes that means, of course, limited, and it'll disappear eventually. Now, I don't know. And then I thought I heard somewhere that there might be two pressings, colored vinyl and a black vinyl. Then, of course, I'm assuming a CD will come out maybe as the regular release. I don't know, but they are all tied in to April 20th, to Record Store Day,
Yeah.
Crooked Boy. And
Which we'll get to in a few minutes.
okay.
Also, Paul McCartney's 50th anniversary of Band on the Run was released on February the 2nd, including an underdub mix of the album. Band on the Run is also available in Dolby Atmos. And in celebration of the new release, the videos for Mamounia and Hell in Wheels had been remastered in 4K and are now available on YouTube. Did you get to hear, because you're into the Atmos stuff, Alan,
Yeah.
have you heard the Band on the Run mix?
Yes, I've only been able to hear it once, but lots of little parts that were buried are now audible. In particular, the most striking one really is there's a guitar solo near the end of 1985, very close to the end of it, and that's, you know. When you go back and listen to the record, you can kind of hear it, but it's very buried, and now it's a bit more prominent. And there's a lot of stuff like that. It's a very nice, spacious mix. It actually, you know, I don't want to make the normal album sound as if it's unexciting, because it's, you know, one of his more exciting albums, but there is like a jump in the level of just sheer visceral excitement hearing the Atmos. It was a really good experience. I look forward to hearing that again. The underdub mix, there is a lot of speculation about what those actually are, even though it says on the record what they actually are, which is a mix that was done on October 14th, 1973. It's kind of interesting because we didn't notice a mix of everything on the album in the sort of tape logs that we had looked at, you know, for that date. But the logs are sometimes not absolutely complete or absolutely accurate. So they could have been from some other time. But you look at the calendar, October 14th was a Sunday. Paul tended really not to work on Sundays. I mean, he did sometimes, and this could have been one of those times because the album was getting so close to being complete. But it also could have been mixed just by Jeff Emmerich. But usually Paul liked to be there when the mixes were being done. So that's mystery number one. If it's October 14th, which is a Sunday, you know, is that really the right date? And was it Paul and Jeff, or was it just Jeff, or whatever? Now, the 14th, I believe, was the day that he had Tony Visconti come to his house and listen to him play through some stuff. And say what he wanted the arrangements to be. The recording session wasn't until the 17th, and for the orchestral stuff. So people who've been speculating, well, so did they just take the orchestral stuff off? No, the orchestral stuff wasn't there yet on the 14th. This could have been a set made for Tony Visconti. To guide him in doing his arrangements, but I believe he has said that he was not allowed to take a tape. So he does say that he sat down with Paul at Paul's piano, and Paul played him a tape and played him on the piano, you know, ideas about what he wanted done, and then gave Tony only 3 days to actually write the orchestrations for, I think, seven songs, and then come in and conduct the orchestrations. This is why Tony was a little bit upset at really not getting credit on the album cover as, you know, arranger and conductor. It says, like, you know, thanks, Tony, or something, you know, which, if you're a professional musician making a career doing things like arrangements and conducting, you want it known that that's you on this album. So anyway, that's what those mixes seem to be. They seem to be, you know, whatever state those tracks were in on the 14th. It is causing one issue for us, which is that we have the lead vocal and background vocal for, I think it was 1985, being done on October 10th. And this version has backing vocals, but it doesn't have the lead vocal. So there are a number of possibilities. Maybe he did a vocal on the 10th and then decided that he didn't like it and had Jeff do the mix without the lead vocal, but with the background vocals, which would mean that there were sessions on the 15th and 16th before the orchestral session. He could have added the final vocal on one of those 2 days. So if we get to revise the book, we'll have to account for that. The whole concept of underdub mixes has started some people in the sort of internet bootleg world making what they're calling underdub mixes of other albums. And you have to be really careful with stuff like this because, when Paul put this out, he's saying this is the underdub mix, but he's also saying this is a mix of all these tracks that were made on October 14th, 1973. Someone did an underdub mix of Red Rose Speedway, and it's really interesting listening, but it's kind of not real in the sense that, for instance, you play My Love, and it doesn't have the orchestral track, and it sounds really kind of interesting. But then when you get to the guitar solo, Henry's guitar solo is there. We know that Henry recorded his guitar solo live with the orchestra during the orchestral session. So this isn't a recording that actually exists in reality. And so you just have to sort of be careful listening to it and how you think of it as, is this some stage for this song in its development? Well, no, it actually isn't. But it is stripping everything away so you can hear a lot of interesting stuff that you don't normally hear.
And that's the thing, we'll probably get into more of this when we talk about this at length, but to me, this reminds me of the concept of stripped down from Double Fantasy. It's taking away the horns, it's taking away the orchestration, it's just the band. And sometimes they'll take vocals that were double tracked and just give you one track. So it sounds even more live and more real. And people are really into that these days. So I think part of the reason why Paul released this is because he's aware of that. I mean, some of the songs, there are noticeable differences with new vocals. And some of them, there's hardly a difference at all from the re release versions. But we'll talk about that more, probably in our next show. Okay. Christie's auction just sold what is believed to be the only painting made by all four Beatles called Images of a Woman. The Beatles collaborated on this painting while they stayed at the Tokyo Hilton Hotel in 1966, while they played at the Budokan Arena there for five shows. It was expected to fetch between $400,000 and $600,000, and all four Beatles signed the painting. It did much better than that. It sold for $1.7 million on February the 1st. Christie's specialist Casey Rogers says, "It's such a rarity to have a work on paper outside of their music catalog that is a physical relic, this tangible object with contributions from all four Beatles of the Beatles, from all four of the Beatles. It's memorabilia. It's a work of art. It appeals to probably a much larger cross-section of collectors. It's a wonderful piece of storytelling."
Was there any information on why that they did this painting in the first place?
They were stuck in their hotel room and they were bored.
Okay.
They had
So
paint.
the promoter for the tour actually brought them all the art supplies and suggested to do something with it, and they weren't supposed to leave their hotel room.
Right.
Here, play
So,
with me.
Paul did, however.
I heard John did too. John and Paul together escaped a couple of times.
It actually sounds like when, when the kids were little and you go out to the restaurant and you give them crayons in the back of the menu in the diner. Here, draw a picture for me. That's funny. That's interesting.
Okay, let's discuss the Record Store Day releases. Thank you, Darren, for supplying me with all this information here. There's several items of interest for Beatle fans. The Beatles Limited Edition Record Store Day 3 turntable. This is a Bluetooth enabled, and it is housed in a Beatle box that includes the four songs they performed, the four songs, there were five songs. It says the four songs they performed 60 years ago on the Ed Sullivan Show on 4 3-inch records. Each record is housed in an outer box with a picture sleeve and poster. The package also includes a Beatles branded carrying case, which holds up to 10 3-inch records. The songs are She Loves You, I Want to Hold Your Hand, Till There Was You, and I Saw Her Standing There, and all 4 3-inch singles will be available individually. They don't say whether or not it's the performances on the Ed Sullivan Show that they're releasing here. I'm assuming it's just the ones in the studio.
Probably.
So,
Any Atmos mixes on those?
any what?
Atmos mixes on no, I'm kidding. That sounds like a lot of fun. Yet another item I don't really need, but it sounds like it would be a kind of like a fun little novelty item. And with a little case that holds 10, you know that future record store days will have further Beatles 3-inch singles. They'll release a total of 11 so that they have to then manufacture a second box to store that one in, and then we're off to the races.
They'll try to add all the other songs from the other Ed Sullivan shows and put them on singles. Okay, the Mind Games EP from John Lennon. This is a limited edition 4-track 12-inch EP. It's supposed to be a teaser for the big box set reissue. There'll be two color variants, the luminous glow in the dark 140 gram colored vinyl and a 180 gram black vinyl edition. The tracks are Mind Games, The Ultimate Mix. I'm the Greatest will be on there. The Ultimate Mix featuring George and Ringo. I Sue Ma Sen, I'm Sorry, The Ultimate Mix. And You Are Here, the outtake of that, take five. Okay, so we'll be getting that a couple of months before the Mind Games box set comes out. Also, George Harrison, Wonderwall Music and Electronic Sound. Both albums will be released as picture discs on Dark Horse Records. This will start a multi-year partnership between Dark Horse Records and Record Store Day to release limited Zoetrope picture disc pressings of George Harrison's entire studio album catalog. The records are individually numbered in silver foil and include an insert reproducing the original artwork, 8,000 units globally. Okay, so all of George's albums will be released this way. You guys gonna go for that?
Possibly. Have you seen the Zoetrope pressing?
No, I haven't.
Adrian got one for our editor and brought it to Fest to give to her. And it really is incredible because it's not just a picture disc. It's a picture disc that as the disc spins, the picture kind of moves.
Oh, cool.
It's really interesting and really beautiful to see. So, and considering that George was, into the sort of, Hindu art that we've discussed in the past, like when we were talking about
Living
living
in
in the
the material
material
world.
world, I can imagine that the pictures that they're going to come up with for these Zoetrope pressings are going to be kind of interesting. So, yeah, I definitely want to get those actually.
That's making me very curious.
They're doing other act artists, some are other artists as well. I think they're doing a Blur album on Record Store Day. Park is it Parkside or Park Life? I'm drawing a blank. Park, but anyway, they're doing that type of picture disc also, so it's hitting on other artists for this Record Store Day. But yeah, really. And now I thought it was pretty interesting that Dark Horse, I think we had discussed this though, is reissuing essentially Apple albums.
If it says all of his studio albums,
Yeah, well, the first two, Wonderwall Music and Electronic Sound, are Apple
right?
coming out of Dark Horse. So, but
Yeah,
we
but
knew that, did we not? I mean, we knew that Dark Horse was taking over George's catalog. I seem to vaguely remember we weren't certain. Did that
Apple stuff as well.
Well, there was they reissued Wonderwall Music and Electronic Sound recently, going back a few years for that. And they put out a CD with bonus tracks. I don't know how many years back we're going there.
Yeah. It's all blur. It's starting to really all blur now.
But the plans that were announced at a press conference right before COVID was just discussing all through the Dark Horse album and tour. They didn't say anything beyond that. But the way this reads, I take it to mean that it's all of a studio album
Oh.
through Brainwashed.
Yeah, interesting. But those will be fun, yeah.
Okay. Then there's the Ringo Starr Crooked Boy single. There'll be a black and white marble vinyl 12-inch. It says here the songs are going to need someone in Crooked Boy, but then I've also seen that this is the full EP
I
with
think
three
that was a
songs.
misprint. The two where they just mentioned two songs,
Yeah.
I think was a misprint.
Okay. So it should be all four songs with February Sky and Adeline. And as we said before, we're not sure when the CD will come out for that. It could be the same time, it could be shortly after that. But yeah, tying in with Crooked Boy. So, and one more thing, Elton John's Caribou album from 1974 is coming out for its 50th anniversary. It'll be a 2 LP set on Vivid Blue Sky vinyl, and the bonus tracks on record two include a version of Snookaroo, the song that he gave to Ringo Starr for his Goodnight Vienna album and played on it, written with Bernie Taupin, of course. I have heard a bootleg from years ago of just Elton. It's like a demo, just him on the piano doing Snookaroo. I have a feeling that's what this is. I don't know if it's a full band arrangement of the song. But for those of us who have to have everything, there'll
Yep.
be a recording of Snookaroo on Caribou. Okay, that's all the Record Store Day releases.
I'm Paul Muldoon, a poet who, over the past several years, has had the good fortune to record hours of conversations with one of the world's greatest songwriters, Sir Paul McCartney, reflecting on everything from the Beatles to Wings. The result is our new podcast, McCartney, A Life in Lyrics. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We have an official word on Elliot Mintz's upcoming book, which will be called We All Shine On, John, Yoko, and Me. It's due out October 22nd, and it's described as a personal and revealing look at the last 10 years of John Lennon's life, written by the friend who knew them best, publicist and music insider, Elliot Mintz. And Elliot tells a story of his relationship with the couple, which continues to this day with his close friendship to Yoko. Amazon describes the book, Mintz transports readers from his first interview with Yoko in 1971 through the years that he supported the couple both personally and professionally through creative highs, relationship and private challenges, fascinating interactions with the other former Beatles, and the happiest moments of their lives together, Sean Lennon's birth and childhood, and of course, Elliot was by Yoko's side after John was murdered, the days, weeks, and months after John's murder, and when Elliot eventually became the official spokesperson of the Lennon estate. So, something to mark down right there. He was a tremendous guest on our show several years ago. Elliot Mintz's new book, coming out October 22nd.
Is his book going to deal just with his relationship with John and Yoko, or his various other, he was Dylan's spokesman for a while too, and if you look at his Facebook page periodically, I mean he's always got these really interesting stories involving all kinds of people. So be interesting if he expands beyond just John and Yoko. Not that I shouldn't say just John and Yoko, like it's
Yeah,
nothing, but
right.
you know what I mean.
Pamphlet.
But yeah, that's just based on the Amazon description. I was kind of surprised with the title because it's really focusing, just by the title, on John, Yoko, and him.
Yeah.
There's so much more to his story than that. And if you look at his website, he's got loads of really good interviews that he's done through the
Oh
years.
yeah.
Lots of celebrities and musicians. So I would kind of look forward to knowing what he had to say about each of them. Okay, got a bit more news here. Like I said, a lot of catching up. Since we just celebrated the 60th anniversary of the Beatles' arrival in America, here's another 60th anniversary about to be celebrated, the release of John Lennon's book In His Own Right. This will take place at the Liverpool Beatles Museum on Matthew Street on March 22nd. Julian Lennon is one of the many contributors for the show. Another person involved in the event will be someone that Darren just wrote about on Facebook. Danger, danger. Will Robinson, Billy Mumy will be there for this special event. I just think it's really cool that they're acknowledging this. You'd think it would just be, the Beatles and their music, but they're pinpointing John's first book here in his own right.
It's interesting too that this is at Rogue Best Museum, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting because, for the entire Beatles era as it was and through the solo years, there was always sort of a distance between the Beatles and Pete. And so now, like, here's a sort of, semi-official function, that various people are getting involved with, like Julian, that's in Rogue Best Museum. So it, maybe those threads are getting, back together a bit, instead of there being, opposing camps about, everything.
Yeah, sure would be nice if Paul or Ringo just met with Pete, talked to him. It's got to be an awkward thing,
It must be, yeah.
even still, after all these years.
Sure.
The fact that Neil Aspinall was Rogue's dad and everything, and he worked for the Beatles at the same time, and
Yeah.
I forgot that.
it
I
must have
forgot.
made it even more difficult for Pete during those years.
Yeah. Well, and like some of the medals on the Sergeant Pepper costumes were Pete's dad's that Neil went and got and brought back, to so they had some medals. So there's a lot here, more than has met the eye, let's say. There's a book someone can do.
That's what Ringo said in Help. It's more here than meets the eye. All right, speaking of Julian, he will have a coffee table size book of his photos coming out October 29th this year. Amazon UK describes it as a book by the musician, visionary, and photographer presenting an opulent panorama of unique perspectives. From breathtaking landscapes to haunting portraits, this masterpiece not only offers visual splendor, but also provides authentic insights into the artist's world of thought in fascinating texts. A journey of discovery into the diversity of a man who masters both the stage and the viewfinder. Very, very complimentary there to Julian. I've seen a lot of his photos and they're wonderful. I love his nature shots.
It's
And
funny, we started this episode as a news show, but I feel like almost like we're turning into the Beatles shopping channel, It's like every bit of news is going to cost us something.
well, this is like a month and a half to 2 months of news here. And there's always a few things that I've left out. I'm sure you heard about this. Patti Boyd is auctioning off love letters that Eric Clapton wrote to her during the love triangle between them and George Harrison. They're about to be auctioned by Christie's this month, offering an unprecedented look at the beginning of Eric's romance with Patti. In one letter from 1970, Eric wrote, "I am writing this letter to you with the main purpose of ascertaining your feelings towards a subject well known to both of us. What I wish to ask you is if you still love your husband. All these questions are very impertinent, I know, but if there is still a feeling in your heart for me, you must let me know." Now, Patti says initially she thought the letters from Clapton were from a weird fan. She had no idea it was from Eric, and she even showed them to George. Also in the auction are photos of George and Patti together, letters from George to Patti, and even a painting that Eric gave to George by Emil Theodor Fransden de Schomburg. The Patti Boyd collection is being auctioned online by Christie's from March 8th to the 21st. And the public auction view takes place at Christie's in London from March 15th to the 22nd.
I believe there are some of George's handwritten lyrics in that collection too.
Really?
Christie's has, if you go to Christie's and look for that auction, you'll see an online catalog with all of the stuff. And some of them were handwritten lyrics to songs. I can't remember which songs. I did, They have it set up so that you can't, you could get a screen capture by getting a screen capture and then editing out, the square with the lyric in it, but you can't just save it as a JPEG or something like that, which is what I sort of would have wanted to do.
They know what they're doing.
Yep.
You can always go to the I Me Mine book because a lot of his stuff is handwritten in there.
That's true. That's true. I haven't checked whether the ones that are shown are included in the I Me Mine book. They might not be. But yeah, I should check that.
Okay. This is among the newest of news items. Three rediscovered cassette tapes that contain music and conversation from the Beatles are being auctioned, made on Ringo Starr's own cassette recorder. They include clips from the Beatles' 1966 tour of Germany, Japan, and the Philippines. Among the recordings is a demo of Ringo's song Don't Pass Me By and the sound of Ringo performing on the piano. Manager Brian Epstein is also heard discussing how to import valuable goods from Japan to the UK without paying high taxes. Another recording is from the group's first trip to India, where they experimented with traditional instruments. Omega Auctions manager Dan Muscatelli Hampson said, "These tapes are truly a remarkable discovery. Hours of previously unheard material from such a pivotal period will be of huge interest to Beatle experts, fans, and collectors, and the fact that they were made by Ringo himself and contain such intimate scenes with the band from the tour is just incredible." He said the tapes include the band simply messing around and having a laugh during what was a famously difficult tour. The sale will take place by Omega Auctions, and that's on March 26th. Okay.
I wonder if this tape of them painting the painting.
On YouTube, they actually have a clip from one of those cassettes, and you hear Ringo playing Don't Pass Me By on the piano. And it sounds exactly the same as he does in concert now, playing it on the piano for a few bars. His playing is exactly the same. So it's nice to have that on the cassette and knowing that it was dated from that time. All right, so we got some news here on the Beatles kids, although we already mentioned Julian. Danny Harrison's most recent album, Inner Standing, was released digitally back in October, and it was just released February 12th on both CD and on vinyl. There's supposed to be a 2 LP yellow vinyl edition for that. And also, there's a new video that Danny made, which you can check out on YouTube, called ICU. That's the letters ICU. Okay. James McCartney is back with a new song called Beautiful, which actually came out digitally on February the 23rd. And there's a video for that already on YouTube. An EP is planned for release later this year. And James's music is actually being produced by someone that Paul has worked with, David Kahn. So it's good to hear from James. It's been many years. 2007 was his last album.
I said, wow, I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah. I've seen him in concert. I think his voice is so strong. His playing is really good.
There's a lot of talent there, but he didn't seem, and I've pointed this out, I interviewed him at WFUV. He didn't necessarily seem comfortable in the spotlight, and having to do publicity behind his releases seemed to be a little difficult for him. And while, he doesn't reinvent the wheel or anything, there's definitely some talent there. There's some really good songs that he's put out on, I guess, one or two. One full-length album, right? And an EP, I think, or
I think he started with an EP and he's had a couple of albums.
maybe two. But I saw him at Rockwood Music Hall, probably maybe where you saw him. Did you see him at the Rockwood Music Hall in New York City?
No, I actually saw him at a small club in New Haven, Connecticut.
It have seats? It was probably nice. I stood.
Not many. Actually, I saw him in another small club in Connecticut, but I can't remember the name of it. But
Yeah, it was, showcase.
Cafe Nine was the one in New Haven.
Okay.
You could
Yeah,
stand
this
right up to it.
showcase. I think for the for his first release, at Rockwood Music Hall in NYC.
Right. But it's well-crafted stuff that he does. I just think he's really shy and a little bit nervous. He might be opening up more now since he's been in the business a bit longer. But it's definitely worth checking out. The new single called Beautiful from James. Sean Lennon's new album is called Asterisms. It's an all-instrumental album featuring many prominent musicians from the New York area. It was first released digitally on February 16th, and you can now get it on CD and LP on Chimera Music. Okay, it actually came out on March the 1st. You can listen to the songs on YouTube. It's really good. It's all instrumental stuff, kind of jazzy, a little progressive. You know, Sean dabbles in everything. He really does. And I love Ghost of a Sabretooth Tiger, which is really like alternative rock. And the progressive band that he was in,
With Les Claypool.
Les Claypool.
Yeah. I tell you,
Claypool
Sean
and
O'Lennon,
Delirium. Yeah.
if Sean O'Lennon and Danny Harrison worked together, I bet you they'd come up with something very fascinating.
Well, you know, Sean's into everything, and a lot of what Danny does is very electronic and
Yeah.
synthetic sounding, and he's into a lot of that stuff. So, but I think Sean could adapt to anything. He can. It's pretty amazing. All right, speaking of Sean, he also just collaborated with the Lemon Twigs
Oh, yeah.
for their new album, which is called The Dream Is All We Know. He co-produced a song in his upstate New York studio for them called In the Eyes of a Girl. And just a few more items here with Beatle-related people. Lawrence Juber has just released another album of his wonderful guitar playing covering Beatles songs titled A Day in My Life. See how he combined that? A Day in the Life, in My Life. A Day in My Life. It's 12 Beatles songs arranged by Lawrence. And it's available on album on 180 gram vinyl and on all streaming platforms. The songs were recorded at Abbey Road in Studio 2, where the Beatles recorded most of their music. And you can purchase signed copies by going to the LJ store at lawrencejuber.com. I also saw an interview with Lawrence on Edward Crawford's podcast, Call Me Mr. Broadstreet. And Lauren said that the new album will be available on CD probably in a few weeks from now. Okay. Billy J. Kramer was just a guest, as was Lawrence Juber and Steve Holly at the Fest for Beatle fans. And he debuted his new single there, which was just released digitally. It's called Are You With Me? That is the title track of his new album, which was recorded at Abbey Road Studios as well in celebration of his 80th birthday. Lawrence Juber, Steve Holly, and Gary Burr all make special appearances on the album, which likely will be out in April. Really good song. Very poppy, very 60s feel, and nice guitar work, as always, from Lawrence Juber on there. Just a few more things left. A band that toured America with the Beatles in 1966, The Circle, are releasing a new album called Revival, which will be out March 22nd on Big Stir Records. Original member Don Daneman is still with the group. He was actually at the Fest for Beatle fans. Might have been last year, I think. Last year or 2 years ago, can't remember. And the album features appearances from Brian Wilson and Beach Boys and Monkees alumni, Probyn Gregory, who plays French horn on a new recording of their song, The Visit. You can pre-order the album at bigstirrecords.com. Speaking of Gary Burr, he told us on Talk More Talk, he's putting out a new book This is the fan fiction book on the Beatles called Come Together. No doubt about a Beatles reunion. Pierce Hemmingson, who we know for his book The Beatles in Canada, is coming out with the second volume of that in the spring, which you can now pre-order on Amazon. And a new single from our friend Jeff Slate. It's called Broken Without You. Has a new studio album coming out May 17th called The Last Day of Summer. And last but certainly not least, McCartney Legacy Volume 2 comes out December the 10th.
So,
Okay, we're all waiting for that.
we hope. I mean, with volume one, I think there were several dates that came and went, and before it finally came out. But we're hoping December 10th sticks, because be nice to have it out by Christmas, right?
Sure.
Alan, have you started, seriously, started with volume three?
Not really. I'm still sort of unwinding from volume two. We're slowly beginning to get some of the materials together and to think about, how we'll approach it, who we need to talk to that we haven't talked to yet. I mean, we've done some interviews that will, that haven't been useful for volumes one and two, but will become useful for volume three. We need to figure out who else, should be in that list and start doing that. But we haven't really started in earnest yet. At some point for the rest of this year, we're gonna have to read volume two again at least twice, and do the whole editing process and all of that stuff. It gets really complicated, but there's that to look forward to. So for the moment, I'm just sort of unwinding in between writing and that stuff.
A random question that will be touched on in two. Did you interview Geoff Britton for two?
Yes.
You did.
Yeah, Adrian did. Adrian and Jeff actually became, sort of friends. Jeff doesn't, generally speaking, like to talk that much about it anymore. He lives in Spain now, and but Adrian had a number of interviews with him, and as with Denny Sywell, he let us sort of go through his diary and establish dates and all of that stuff. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. So yeah.
I would think, gosh, you never did talk to Jeff Emmerich, did you? He probably passed away by the time you started the book, right?
But he did write a book and he did do a lot of interviews. So we have some information from him, and we have I think we have some interviews he did with other people. You sometimes can persuade people to give you their tape. So we have, Jeff is very represented as he was in volume one. But he becomes more important. He becomes in volume two, he becomes really McCartney's go-to engineer when he's available, which he isn't always, because he has a job. He's working for George Martin at Air. And George at a certain point in volume two promoted him, which gave him more responsibility at Air, so he couldn't just take off and work with Paul all the time. So there were some other engineers too involved, like, well, for Venus and Mars, Alan O'Duffy did a lot of the engineering for that, and excuse me, and we spoke to him.
So the whole book process is much more laborious than most people realize.
Ken says this because he sent me an email the other day saying, "Well, how come it's taking so long if you're done with it now to come out?" So I just sort of listed in a huge paragraph the number of things that have to be done now, now that the writing is finished before it actually comes out, and it is a pretty laborious process, but.
Kind of thinking that it's a similar thing that with what Mark Lewisohn's doing, because Mark not only has to work on volume two, But he's also working on volume three at the same time, because if there's any people that he can interview that were there at that time period, he's got to get them now.
That's right.
So if you're offered an interview with someone that worked with McCartney in the 80s, 90s, and up, you're still going to take it, because you could certainly use that later on.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, because we, look, a number of people who we interviewed for volume one and even volume two died before volume two was finished.
Yeah.
So we have like a little, like in the Oscars and the Grammys, when they have a little memorial for,
Right.
we have a list of, people who helped us and have passed on. John Morris, for instance. John Morris was very
Yeah.
important in volume one. He was not that it's particularly in the volume, but I mean, he was at Woodstock. He made a lot of those announcements, that you hear on the recording. He sort of was managed the Fillmore East. He was very closely involved with Graham and Bill Graham. And he knew Linda when she was a photographer, just shooting rock shows. She'd hang out in his office at the Fillmore with a couple of other writers and photographers that he knew. And so he managed the 1972 Wings tour.
For
Paul
him.
invited him to become Wings' manager, which he didn't want to do. And in fact, actually, by the end of the tour, they were not on the best of terms. In fact, when we did the interview with him, at the beginning of the interview, he said, "So, is Paul involved with this book? Is this a sort of an official function of MPL or anything like that?" And I said, no, it's totally independent. He's not participating in any way. And John Morris said, "Well, okay, good. So I can tell it the way it really was." So,
Yeah.
but he just died a couple of months ago. So yeah.
Yeah. By any chance, did you speak with Ken Womack at all, regarding Mal Evans at this particular time in the 70s? Because one of the things that I found really fascinating in his book on Mal was that Paul asked Mal if he'd be willing to help him with the Wings Over America tour, which
Right.
unfortunately he died right before that happened.
Right.
Did
Yeah.
you recover anything about that, or did you talk to Ken about that at all?
We talked to Ken because we knew that Ken had Mal's diaries
Yeah.
and was writing his own book about Mal, and he very generously supplied us the relevant sections of Mal's diary and his own listing of what occurred when during that period. So yeah, Ken was really helpful.
Good. Okay. So before we wrap things up, since Darren and I both are wearing blue shirts, which we didn't plan, and we mentioned Yoko's birthday, this is the new shirt from Madeline Beccaro, which is the front cover of her book In Your Mind, which is right over here, The Infinite Universe of Yoko Ono. And Darren is
I'm
wearing
working
the
now
Dallas
in Belgium.
shirt. I love those shirts.
Sweet. And I'm drinking out of a blue can that actually kind of matches.
He's color coordinated.
Don't know what that has to do with anything. Should I mention the Facebook page?
Oh, yeah, sure.
My friends, I've threatened this for years, and it is now finally exists. We have a new presence on Facebook. Our new Facebook page is called Things We Said Today Video Podcast. It has the revised logo. If you've been following the show for a while, you know the British flag, the Union Jack, which has been sort of the identifier, if that's the right proper word, when you're looking for us on Facebook. Now we have a logo that was designed by a friend of mine, actually from high school, Anthony Giacone, who's in advertising, and he designed this for us, and I'm trying to pull up a good picture of it. It's so you had a visual, And actually, Anthony and I lost touch when we graduated high school in 1983 and saw each other for the first time since graduation day at the Fest for Beatle Fans. He came by on the second day, so it was a very quick reunion of sorts. And so he designed this logo. This will have to do here. I'm distracted trying to get this picture, but if you could see you're looking for this on Facebook. Okay, you're looking for that logo. This is the new page, Things We Said Today video podcast. And I emphasize that because there are two other Facebook pages that we've had forever on Facebook, and those pages will eventually someday go bye-bye. So it's all in one place. The thing is, we've got thousands of people connected to us at the older pages. So please, if you're watching right now, take 2 seconds, go to Facebook, find our new page, and click like or follow or whatever the button says. Because at some point, I won't do it right away, we're going to delete those older pages. There's one that I actually cannot get into to close out, but I'll figure it out in time. And again, the idea is to have an updated place, which is a forum for me, Ken, and Alan, and you, that has current images and current photographs. And right now we have 149, I'm sorry, 194 likes, 434 followers. We have a lot more who watch us. So please take a moment, join Things We Said Today video podcast, our new Facebook page, so that you're not shut out when the old ones disappear.
I also would like to just say one thing, and that's to thank all the new subscribers to our YouTube channel, because as you know, we were absent for about a month and a half, and we gained like 100 subscribers without even having a new show. So thanks to all the new people listening and watching our show, and also all the loyal ones from years gone by. We have over 4,000 subscribers now, and thanks to all of you for subscribing to Things We Said Today. It means a lot to us.
And it actually maybe speaks volumes that we picked up fans by not doing any shows. So I'm not sure exactly what that what you're telling us, that maybe we'll gain more followers without doing anything. I mean,
We'll go away for a year and then we'll have
see how many we have.
100,000 more subscribers. So why don't we wrap things up by telling us what we got in store on each of our own projects and shows and things? Darren?
I just celebrated my 40th anniversary at WFUV on February 26th, 1984. That was when I did my first show, and it's completely a unique situation, and I understand it, and I'm very blessed and fortunate that I've had the career that I've had, because in 84, WFUV was a genuine, bona fide, full-fledged college radio station. And I went to Fordham University specifically, to be honest with you, to work at WFUV. It helped that I got in. They could have rejected me, and this none of this would be happening now. But and I was just around at the right place at the right time, as changes were being made at FUV by the late 80s into 1990, and just one thing led to another, and I happened to be at a meet at the right meeting at the right time, or happened to be hanging out in the hallway to talk to someone at the right, and I ended up getting hired as the station was making its transition to what it is now, which is a non-commercial public station that is owned by Fordham University, but no longer a college station in the classic sense. They claim we're professionals. We all are hired and work at WFUV. So 40 years have gone by. In fact, today is what, March? We're recording this on March 3rd. Today's the anniversary of my second show on WFUV, which was a Saturday, March 3rd, 1984. So, but anyway, look for the new Facebook page for us. If you want to find me on Facebook, that's simple. There's two pages. Just Google my name, or search my name rather, on Facebook. Send me a friend request, or like or follow the other page. And that's a good way for us to keep in touch. And I like to share some factoids about music in general on my Facebook pages, and foam at the mouth about Ken and my favorite baseball team, the New York Mets, and complain there. Finally, if you want to listen to me on FUV, Monday through Thursday nights, 10 p.m. till 2 a.m., and Saturday afternoons from 1 until 4 p.m. at 90.7 FM.
And Alan, how's Bucky?
Okay. Yeah, you can reach me on Facebook either at Alan Kozin or Alan Kozin Remixed. You can write to all of us by email at thingswesaidtodayradioshow@gmail.com. I just posted the last show on only the new Facebook page. I don't know if I should be posting them on the old ones too, trying to sort of encourage people to go to the new one.
Why
So,
not?
yeah.
Yeah.
And
Both.
tell us, we're being nice, but we're going to stop doing this soon. The new one, yes, it is Things We Said Today video podcast. Yeah.
Okay, not Beatles.
No Beatles. Things We Said Today video podcast.
Okay. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. Like I said, I'm just sort of still unwinding from the book, and so I don't have any real projects. Apart from the book, there's all the sort of clerical stuff that piled up, records that need to be listened to, and all that stuff. So I'm catching up with all that. Got to restring all those guitars. So just hanging out, being
Life is.
down.
Yeah, I gotta spend some time listening to Sean's new album,
Right.
Danny's new album. Looking forward to that. If you want to get in touch with me directly, my email address is everylittlething@att.net. I also have a Facebook page, Ken Michaels. You can friend me on there. As far as my other shows on my own YouTube channel, Ken Michaels Radio, I just did my second interview with Laurie Kay. Laurie was part of the team of the RKO Radio Network that conducted the very last interview with John Lennon, which was with Yoko at the Dakota on December 8th of 1980. She just released a book telling her whole life story and her career working in radio, television, and film called Confessions of a Rock and Roll Name Dropper, My Life Leading Up to John Lennon's Last Interview. She is just a delight to talk to, and she not only interviewed John and Yoko, but she first interviewed George Harrison, then George Martin, then Paul McCartney and Wings, and that led to John and Yoko. And so she talks about all that in the book and in my interview with her, as well as other people that she worked for, including Dick Clark, for example. Real fascinating story, and those of us who are in the business, especially radio people, you can relate to all that she went through. In the book. Also, Talk More Talk, my other talk show podcast. We just did a show from the Fest for Beatle Fans, which was recently posted. That was our panel where we talked about 1974 and the solo Beatles. That was actually Talk More Talk combining with Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols of Two Legs, the Paul McCartney podcast. So that's up, and we're doing a show tomorrow on Monday, which will be a little late for George Harrison's birthday, and we should be talking about our favorite George Harrison lyrics from his career, Beatles and solo. Also, if you want to listen to Every Little Thing, which is my syndicated Beatles radio show, the easiest way to do so is to go to WFDU's website. That's Fairleigh Dickinson University's website in New Jersey. It's WFDU.FM, where they post my two most recent shows that aired on the radio station as part of their archival programs. In fact, if you really want to become familiar with that radio station, all their shows are archived. Check out all the different titles, so many different wonderful specialty shows that are on that station, WFDU.FM. Under the show titles, just type in Every Little Thing and you can find the last two shows. Okay, I think that pretty much covers everything.
Okay, thanks, Ken. So that was catching up with the news, and then from now on we'll have it as part of the show. We still have our panel from Fest to post, which we'll do fairly soon. And okay, so for Ken Michaels and Darren DeVivo, I'm Alan Kozin. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.